Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Lara on WNYC. Remember, we are talking politics at this time in the show every day through the September 14th New York primary. And we're going to look national now and then at a state Senate primary in Queens that seems to have been inspired by the incumbent's vote against same-sex marriage in the state legislature. Very few Democrats taking that position. This one, Shirley Huntley, did. So we'll talk to her and her challenger, Lynn Nunes. But first, to the national scene, because in this election year of American discontent, incumbents are in trouble. The latest sign of that, Lisa Murkowski conceding her Republican Senate primary in Alaska yesterday to Tea Party candidate Joe Miller. Many Democrats in Congress are, of course, in trouble for the fall election, maybe even enough to flip control of one or both houses from substantial Democratic majorities. Let's take stock of the race for control of the Senate. With me now for kind of a state-by-state Senate campaign checklist are ABC News political director Amy Walter and Nate Silver, who writes the politics blog 538, which just became the New York Times politics blog 538. Hi, Amy. Hi, Nate. Thanks for coming on today.
Thanks a lot.
Hi, Brian.
And, Nate, the Times has a nice box today on seats that the Republicans need to hold. Democratic seats that they feel they are poised to win, and eight battleground seats that could decide who winds up with the majority in the Senate. So let's pretty much do the list. But, Amy, first of all, Nate, New York is not on this list, even though Schumer and Gillibrand are both up for election or reelection this fall. And I have heard some conservative talk shows where they are saying Schumer or Gillibrand could fall. Do you see virtually no chance of Republicans winning New York?
I mean, certainly not for Schumer, whose approval ratings are still on the order of 60%. He's sort of survived this incumbent wave intact, it looks like. For Gillibrand, I mean, she had a lot of people who could have given her a really tough race, like the former governor, Pataki. But no one so far has polled within more than about 10 points of her. It looks like, you know, with Republicans having so many other good targets this year, that she'll probably kind of get a pass. But, you know, as bad as things are for Democrats, they could have been worse. You know, you could have had a case here in New York where she was, you know, in a toss-up race as well, and it looks like she'll be okay.
Any difference on that, Amy? Any little tiny crack in the door for the Republicans in New York State, or should we just not waste our time talking about that?
Well, we won't spend much more time on it. In many ways, because it's just such an expensive state. I mean, if this were South Dakota or, you know, another place where, you know, the media was relatively inexpensive, it might be a place to take a run at it. But, boy, when you got to try to play in a lot of big states already, like Pennsylvania and Florida, you're spending millions of dollars just to take those. There's just nothing left over for New York.
Now, Connecticut in our area is on the central battleground list, the seat Christopher Dodd is retiring from. Here are brief clips from campaign commercials from the two candidates.
Since January, he's taken $500,000 from PACs and special interests. How can he fight the special interests if they're paying for his campaign?
Dick Blumenthal will always stand up to the special interests.
He's always there for average folks like me.
He'll do the right thing.
All right. So the female voice for the male candidate, the male voice for the female candidate. Amy, how do you see Democratic State Attorney General Richard Blumenthal and Republican wrestling executive Linda McMahon right now? How competitive is this?
Well, this is one of those races that not that long ago, a lot of us would have said, you know, this is pretty much in the bag for the Democrats. They got a great candidate, Dick Blumenthal. He's very well known, well liked, survived an earlier flap over how he had talked about his service during Vietnam. And yet now there's growing concern among Democrats that maybe this isn't going to be so easy anymore. Obviously, Linda McMahon has lots and lots of money, and as you know, she has to run on the New York media market as well. She's willing to put it up front. I think there's also some concern that while the WWE is controversial, and there have been some very specific examples that Democrats like to point out about it, sexist and other other issues with the programming, I think that McMahon has done a pretty decent job up to this point into basically saying, look, this is just a soap opera, it's fake, and she's going to, you know, really try to make the issue about an outsider versus an insider. And in a year like this, that really matters.
Maybe the news is we got a wrestling executive to admit that it's fake. Nate, what do you think that race will hinge on? Will it be things like we heard in those spots?
Well, you know, people talk about kind of the working class vote being key, but in Connecticut, there aren't as many working class folks as there are kind of people who are in the shadow of Wall Street, I suppose. And that's someone with whom the president has lost a fair amount of popularity. So that's kind of, you know, that's kind of the swing vote, I suppose, probably the socially liberal kind of Wall Streeters and hedge funders in Connecticut. You know, I tend to think that McMahon has a little bit more baggage than she might need there. Blumenthal started out being pretty popular. I mean, that's a state where if things are really, really bad for Democrats, they could certainly lose. I think nothing is off the table this year when you have a well-financed candidate like her, but it's not on the front lines of concern, I would say. You know, Blumenthal, as Amy mentioned, has kind of survived an earlier scare. He seems to have a reservoir of kind of goodwill.
So from those incidents where he got caught saying he was a Vietnam vet when he was just a Vietnam era vet, Nate, have you seen deep polling in Connecticut on this that says basically he's off the hook for that or not?
He lost a few points. I mean, you know, he went from having a, you know, 20-point lead or something to like a 13-point lead, you know. So with a 13-point lead, you commit one more gaffe or you lose a debate or something and you're not necessarily so safe. So he kind of put himself in a position where a second scandal or a second big development could get him into trouble. And, you know, I think certainly you have to assume that the wild cards this year as they come up have tended to favor Republican candidates so far, and it'll probably be true as we go forward after Labor Day.
Another battleground state, Amy, is Illinois. Is that President Obama's own former Senate seat?
That is. You know, there's been a lot of talk starting earlier this year about can Republicans score the trifecta, and that would be picking up President Obama's seat in Illinois, the vice president's seat in Delaware, and then knocking off Majority Leader Harry Reid in Nevada. And, you know, Nate has on his chart almost 100% chance that Delaware flips, 91% he has right now. I think that is the conventional wisdom, is that if Mike Castle wins his primary, and by the way, I think this is a very interesting thing to look at in the next week. The primary is on the 14th. The Tea Party group, the same group that was behind Joe Miller, has said they are going to make knocking off Mike Castle, who is the Republican establishment favorite, their priority. There's no indication right now that their favorite candidate, her name's Christine O'Donnell, is going to win. But Alaska surprised a lot of folks, too.
I think we've seen in a number of cases where the Tea Party candidates, Amy, have come up very suddenly in the last weeks of the campaign. We even saw that with Scott Brown, whether you consider him a Tea Party candidate or not, against Coakley in Massachusetts. We saw it with Joe Miller here. And so who knows?
Right. I mean, I think one thing that's important to remember about Alaska, there's a lot of back and forth, and there's certainly a lot of off-the-record conversations that many of us have been having with folks in Alaska, but there seems to be one constant through all this, which is if you're an incumbent, no matter how safe you think you are, no matter how much you think you know your state, you cannot take anything for granted. And that's what folks in Alaska will tell you, is Lisa Murkowski wanted to run a traditional Rose Garden positive campaign against somebody who was being funded by groups that were attacking her, and the candidate, Joe Miller, was attacking her and attacking her record, and she didn't respond. And you know what? In this time, you can't assume that voters are just going to say, oh, I know Lisa Murkowski, she'd never say that, or I know Mike Castle, he'd never say that. So that's going to be important. But Illinois, definitely a toss-up right now. But, you know, you look at the candidates, Mark Kirk, another one of these moderate Republicans, who didn't have, but he did not have a Tea Party candidate, or at least a serious one, up against Alexei Giannoulis, who's the state treasurer. Both have some significant baggage, and I think what we're gonna find is this is going to be a pretty negative, nasty campaign with a lot of finger pointing. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, the question is Obama going to be able to use his popularity to help his candidate?
We're looking at whether the Republicans can take control of the U.S. Senate this fall, state by state, with Nate Silver from the New York Times 538 blog and Amy Walter, ABC News political director. We'll go through as many of these states as we can in our remaining time. In this New York Times chart today, the five that Republicans currently hold that they would need to hold, Florida, Kentucky, Missouri, New Hampshire, Ohio, the four that they feel they are poised to win from Democrats, Arkansas, Delaware, Indiana, and North Dakota, and there are eight other battleground states. And let's take another one of those, Nate. Pennsylvania, the Arlen Specter seat. Pennsylvania, such a battleground in the Democratic primary in 2008 between Clinton and Obama, and certainly in the general election, the last few presidential elections. So this is a swing state. I heard somebody describe Pennsylvania as the urban centers of Philadelphia and Pittsburgh. It's a northeast urban state, you know, on the polls, Philadelphia and Pittsburgh, with Alabama in the middle. So is that a polarized race, with liberal Democrat Joe Sestak having beaten the more centrist Specter, and conservative Republican Pat Toomey? Is that really, you know, the real right versus the real left?
Well, first of all, Sestak hasn't actually legislated as that much of a liberal. He's been kind of a moderate for the most part. Uh-huh. In a primary, of course, you pretend to be much more liberal or much more conservative than you really are, because that's who your electorate is. But I think mostly in Pennsylvania we're seeing the kind of national environment manifest for states like Pennsylvania and like Ohio, which are kind of close to the national median. You're starting to see Democrats fall behind by 6 or 8 points. You know, that kind of matches what's happening on the generic congressional ballot, where you kind of just ask voters, hey, are you thinking about voting for Democrat or Republican this year? And now Republicans have a good edge there, about 6 points. That's kind of translating through to states where you have, you know, two candidates who maybe don't have that much baggage, who are kind of parallel in some ways, and just the national kind of trends favor Republicans this year. I mean, Sestak's someone who Democrats were pretty excited about after the primary, but he's trailing by, you know, high single digits, by double digits in a couple polls, and we're kind of at the point in time now where it's not easy to overcome an 8-point deficit, especially when you know, he has pretty good name recognition there because he ran a primary, and there's not that many undecideds in that state necessarily.
Another battleground is Nevada, Amy. Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid's seat, won in that trifecta with Tea Party challenger Sharon Angle. How is that going now?
It depends on who you ask. If you live in the state of Nevada, I don't know that I'd want to turn on my television much between now and November. I mean, they are getting bombarded with ads, both from the candidates and from outside groups, and it's not pretty. It's really a race to see who can be tagged as the most unpopular, rather than one of these candidates winning. The real issue is going to be who's going to lose. And you have both candidates whose unfavorables are higher than their favorable ratings. You're going to have Harry Reid basically saying Sharon Angle's too extreme, in a different category on a whole lot of issues. And you're going to have Harry Reid, of course, holding the baggage of being part of a Democratic leadership in a year where people are not really happy with what's going on in Washington. Look, the polls have been basically shown the same thing for months and months, which is Harry Reid is basically stuck at about 45 or 46% of the vote. So to win this thing, he's got to be able to not only make her less popular than he, but also hope that those people who are so frustrated they just don't like either candidate because it's gotten so disgusting, end up picking a third-party candidate in Nevada. There's actually a line called none of the above. Oh. And that could be the difference between Harry Reid winning and Harry Reid losing.
Or maybe then Nevada has to live with an open seat for the next 6 years. 49 U.S. senators. All right, we have 2 minutes left. Let's touch Wisconsin real quick, and then if we have time, California, also on the list of eight battleground states. Russ Feingold in Wisconsin trying to hold a seat against Ron Johnson. And Feingold, Nate, has been to the left of the president voting against TARP from the left, against the bank reform bill, because it wasn't tough enough. And interestingly, opposition to the bank reform bill and to TARP are big conservative agenda items. And I'm just curious if you think Feingold gets any electoral edge for opposing those things, even if for the wrong reasons from a GOP point of view.
Yeah, this is the one state where I think I'm more optimistic for Dems than the consensus, where the polling shows the race about even. But, you know, Feingold's a guy who is so far to the left in some ways, he almost seems like a centrist guy. He's kind of wrapping around and has not taken some of the unpopular votes like on TARP that a lot of other Democrats have. You know, he's running against a candidate who's pretty unknown and pretty inexperienced. You know, it doesn't quite add up for me. And his approval ratings aren't bad. They're still kind of in the mid-50s for the most part. And usually you're going to squeak by with the win there. I think in Wisconsin we have to watch and see how Johnson, the Republican candidate, defines himself. And also Wisconsin's a state with same-day registrations. You can just kind of walk up and vote on election day. So, you know, can Feingold in a bad year for Democrats have the student populations in Madison and Milwaukee be enthusiastic? If so, I think he'll squeak by. But that's another race that no one expected to be as close as it is a few months ago.
Amy, give me 30 seconds on Fiorina Boxer in California.
This is the CEO versus the longtime incumbent, and the question for California voters is, will they support a pro-life Republican, something that they haven't done before, or will they stick with an incumbent who they're really not particularly happy with either?
And it's the same issues, again, economy, reaction against health reform.
Exactly. And the fact that Barbara Boxer's been there for a long time. She's been there since 1992, so time for change.
All right. We'll keep checking in with both of you. ABC News political director Amy Walter, Nate Silver, who writes the 538 blog, now available through the New York Times website, or still at 538.com?
No, I'll redirect you to the New York Times.
Okay.
So, yeah, we're all moved over there.
Well, congratulations on now being a wholly owned subsidiary. You're like the little inventor who comes up with this great new muffler and then gets acquired by General Motors.
Still independent-minded, Brian.
Yeah. Nate, thanks a lot. Amy, thanks a lot.
Sure, thanks.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Now on to this contentious New York State Senate race, happening largely because a Democrat came out against the New York same-sex marriage bill. We'll talk to both candidates.